You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty Health Share is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
My son was in the Army back during Desert Storm. But even then, he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq. Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now, 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
At St. Jude, a family never sees a bill at all. It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Sometimes riders feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our riding into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable riders to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a rider's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
Sometimes we need to slow down and remember the simple pleasures in life. Good coffee, good books, and good company. Come on in. Take a seat. The coffee's just been brewed. Let's see who we have in the coffee shop today.
What a beautiful day in the coffee shop. Now today, I'll let y'all know a secret. I'm not looking for one book on a table. I'm looking for a stack. There's a stack of four. And who knows, he's got a bag. There may be more hiding in the bag. And today, I am interviewing a book reviewer, something I stay away from. And his name, he goes by The Real Books By, but his name is Ryan Steck. How you doing today, Ryan?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, more than happy to have you. Now, why don't you tell our listeners the four books I see on the table?
Yeah, so these are all summer books. In fact, I would consider them to be the four biggest books of the summer. The first one is called Spymaster by Brad Thor.
Oh my gosh.
It's the newest.
You know I'm such a Brad Thor fan.
I mean, who's not a Brad Thor fan, though? Let's be honest. Like, I think everybody loves Brad Thor. The guy's everywhere. He's a celebrity author. And his latest book, the next in his Scott Harvath series, is probably his best work yet. I just finished it yesterday, actually. And there's more action. He's really up the stakes. And there's a lot more emotion in this book than any other book he's ever written before. It's fantastic.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. And that one comes out on July 3rd. I happen to know that, of course, because I actually take the day after any Brad Thor book comes out off work.
You know, it's funny you say that. A lot of people do. Last year, I was in my office and I got a call. And it was a reporter with the New York Times, and they told me they were doing a piece on Brad Thor, and did I have some time to talk about him? So we talked for a long time, and it's hilarious because when the profile on Brad came out, they just borrowed like one line from me, and I've never said anyone to this before, but it's really funny. The line that they took from me, they quoted me on, it had something to do with the fact that a lot of readers will message me and email me and ask very early in the year, like, when is Brad Thor's book coming out? Because I want to plan my vacation around it. And I actually told that to the reporter. I thought we were off the record, and we weren't. So he that was like the only thing that he actually used for my whole time talking to him. But you're not the only one. I mean, I've long said that Brad Thor's book should just come with like a get out of work or get out of school slip, because once you get it, you have to start it. Once you start it, you can't put them down.
Oh, no. I get his books on my Kindle at midnight, and that book is done by sunrise.
Yeah, and this one's really fast-paced. Like, this one is it's probably his fastest book. The plot just screams. There's never a spot where you can just sit it down. Yesterday was one of my kids' birthday parties, so I had to put the book down for a little bit. But it was terrible because there's no spot. A lot of books, you kind of like come to an end of a chapter here or there, or the first act of the book or the second, whatever. And there's a natural kind of break in the story where you can set it down and say, I'm going to go to sleep. I'll pick this up tomorrow. You don't really get that with a Brad Thor book. There's no spot to just put it down and take a break. You've got to finish it.
Well, I have actually quoted Brad many times on this show. And in fact, as you know, when I was interviewing Jack Carr for the first time ever, I actually did an audio clip on this show, and I've never had the occasion to do that before, so I got a good kick out of that.
Brad is one of those guys, again, because he's a celebrity author, he's all over. Like, he's on Fox News, he's doing interviews, you see him on Megyn Kelly, and he's one of, like, he's one of the coolest guys. He reminds me of President Bartlett in the West Wing TV show, because like Bartlett, Brad can just like quote so many people out of nowhere. Like a situation will come up, someone will say something, and he's got like this great quote from someone that he can just like shoot out at like without any warning. And I've always wanted the ability to do that, and he does it so well, and he makes it look so cool. So yeah, you should definitely play Brad Thor sound bites.
Well, the one time I used a sound clip on this show, it was Brad. All right, so what's the next summer beach read you have sitting there?
The next one actually comes out June 12th, and it's called Tom Clancy Line of Sight. It's written by Mike Madden. And Mike Madden actually joined the Tom Clancy universe last year. He did his first book called Point of Contact. And for those who don't know, you know, everyone knows Tom Clancy, but there's two Clancy books out every year. There's the summer book and then there's the fall book. And so Mark Greene used to do the fall book. Mark Cameron's now doing that. Grant Blackwood used to do the summer book, which is traditionally a Jack Ryan Jr. thriller. And now Mike Madden's doing that. And his last book was just great. I mean, I loved it. And this one's better. I got it a few weeks ago, and when I started reading it, I realized it was special pretty early on. By the time the book was done, my biggest takeaway was that everyone kind of loves the Tom Clancy universe, but there's always been this stigma, I think, that Jack Ryan Jr. and those books live in the shadow of the Jack Ryan Sr. books, because that's the Jack. When you say Jack Ryan, everyone thinks of the older Jack Ryan. And when I finished this book, I thought about that, and I thought, you know, Junior's coming out of Senior shadow for sure. He proves that, you know, he's really his own series character. He can carry a franchise on his own, especially if it's Mike Madden writing him, because he's done a really, really amazing job.
Outstanding. Now, before we get to the third and fourth book, you only review thrillers and mysteries and related books. You don't review any other genre. What? And you go, and that's why you go by the name Real Book Spy. How did you get your start, the Real Book Spy? What made you decide to go out on this limb with this genre-specific website and genre-specific book review program?
Yeah, it's funny because it's a question I get asked a lot, because there's, you know, so many people who love to read, and I mean, I probably get asked daily, how do I become a book reviewer or a book critic, like professionally? And honestly, if I knew, I would tell you. I think a lot of people think I'm holding out on them to not create more competition for myself, and that's really not the case. It's a career that I've really been fortunate and blessed to have. It's something I love doing. I got started. I was a sports journalist, and I'm a failed sports journalist. I'm super dyslexic, and I really struggled to write for a while. And I didn't get diagnosed till I was an adult. And my doctor said you should read a lot. So I don't know why, but I was looking into authors who might be dyslexic, and I discovered Vince Flynn, who is my all-time favorite author. And I got into his Mitch Rapp series, and I really became a fan of not just the genre, but specifically Mitch Rapp and what Vince was doing. And it started my transition from sports into the book world. There was a series of events that I guess just kind of like by dumb luck, I was able to kind of get linked up with Vince's publisher, and then Kyle Mills, who took over the Mitch Rapp series when Vince Flynn passed away in June of 2013. And I started writing reviews for other media outlets. And I don't want to say like that sucked and I didn't like it, but it wasn't for me. I had a very distinct way I wanted to go about this. I felt like I had my own style. And the creative process for me was different, I think, than a lot of reviewers. The way I came about it was very different in and of itself. Because I'm a fan of the genre at the same time, I connect more with readers. So I was looking for this way to connect with more readers. And two things really stuck out to me. One was there was no spot for thrillers like on the internet. You could go to like Publishers Weekly or Kirkus Reviews or, you know, someplace like that, but it was never dedicated only to thrillers. And the second thing was, if you tweet to Publishers Weekly or Kirkus, you don't know who that is. Like, no one knows who's responding to them on Twitter. You don't even always know who writes the review. So what I wanted to do was sort of change that aspect of this whole process and be someone that people could, you know, have access to and talk to. I want to talk about my favorite books. So I know other readers do too. And one of like the things that I enjoy most about my job is I get to talk with readers about books and then recommend books that I think people are going to enjoy. So to do that, you know, I had this idea in my mind, and then to execute it, I really didn't know how to go about it, and I was really apprehensive of even trying. And it was, I developed this friendship with Gail Lynn. And for those who don't know Gail Lynn, she's a prolific author. She's a spy novelist. I call her the queen of the spy thrillers. And but she also headed up International Thriller Writers of America with David Morrell. And so when I was kind of talking with her very early in our friendship via email, she was encouraging me. Like, you know, when we launched ITW, there was no place for thrillers, authors. And
ITW?
You know, International Thriller Writers.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. So she told me when we launched International Thriller Writers, there was no place really for thriller authors. Like, there was like, I don't know what they're called, but like, you know, there was one for crime writers and mystery writers, and they all had their own conventions. And so when Gail Lynn and David Morrell put International Thriller Writers together, and then they have this thing called Thriller Fest every year, it really brought the thriller community together. But there was never like a platform to just cover them. And so that was my goal. And when I had talks with Gail early on, she was very supportive. And as I got to know other authors, specifically Kyle Mills was also very supportive. In fact, Kyle Mills and then Ted Bell, who writes the Alex Hawk thrillers, they were really instrumental in me branching out to go for this because they kept saying it's a good idea. Someone's got to do it. And the authors would get behind this and then the publishers will too. So it was kind of a big leap for me because at the time I had 5 kids. I have 6 kids now and a wife to support. So the idea of starting, you know, my own site and, you know, looking at how do we generate a profit? How do we go about this? It was really intimidating. And I kind of wasn't going to do it. And then I wrote some reviews for a different media outlet and I absolutely hated it. I did not like working with their editors. I didn't like that it felt very political to me. I wanted to go about it my way. And I said, you know, I've had enough. And with my wife's permission, I launched The Real Book Spy in December of 2015.
Wow. That's quite a leap of faith. Now, were the authors the ones that connected you with their publishers, or how did you get hooked up? Because I know to get all these advanced copies, you have to have, because every one of these books is an ARC or an advanced reader copy. You have to have a lot of industry connections. So how did you develop all those connections?
I'm really a people person, and I became fast friends with a lot of these authors. I think what they know is when I get a book, I don't care about someone's political leanings or anything. I care about the book. And if the book's good, I'm going to say it's good. And if it's not, I'm going to say it's not. I'm going to try to do it in a way that doesn't offend them because I have a lot of respect for someone who can lock themselves away for 8 months to a year and bang out a full 100,000 word manuscript that turns into a book. I never just want to tear someone apart or rip their work apart. I don't think that's fair. It's all open to interpretation anyways. So I'm going to just be fair. And if it's good, I'm going to say it's good. And I really don't know how a lot of my relationships form, but I just enjoy talking with people and asking questions and getting to know writers. And so there was certainly, you know, there was a guy at Atria Books who really supported me from the get-go. He was Vince Flynn's publicist, and he was probably my first real contact. And then as I got to know authors, they were really supportive, and soon, you know, their publicists were reaching out, and marketing directors wanted to know. And I think when we really started to move a lot of books, when The Real Book Spy was generating a lot of sales, because we sell like thousands of books a month now, I think publishers ultimately take note of that. And it is interesting. I joke with my kid, you have to always pay your dues. I went from, hey, my name's Ryan Speck, I started this website, to you like, can I please get this book to review, to like very quickly them reaching out to me and saying, hey, can you look at this? Hey, would you think this would be a fit with your audience? So I was really fortunate that I just really fell into a lot of this and I feel very blessed. It's a lot of work, but it's work that I enjoy. And, you know, having the contacts is definitely a big part of it. But I enjoy talking to these people. I enjoy talking with different editors and publicists and the authors themselves. And that's just a fun part of this gig for me.
Well, that's outstanding. So I've got to know, what's the next book in your stack?
Yeah, the next one is called The Other Woman by Daniel Silva. And Daniel Silva, his Gabriel Alon series, if you've not read it, Gabriel Alon started out as an Israeli spy turned assassin. He's part of the Mossad. And the series follows his career trajectory as he moves up the ladder He's now the chief of the Mossad, which he refers to only as the office. And I can't think of a better spy novelist than Daniel Silva. There's just nobody in the game right now that does it better than he does. And he's done it for a long time at a very high level, that Vince Flynn, Brad Thor, and Silva are kind of those guys that are the godfathers of this genre. If there was a Mount Rushmore of thrillers, like, their faces would be on it. The Other Woman is the 18th book in his series, and he's showing absolutely no signs of slowing down. So if you like really good, like, action-packed but full of suspense and smart thrillers, you won't find a better one than Daniel Silva's The Other Woman in bookstores this summer.
Outstanding. I'll have to add that to my to-be-read list. Now, I do have another question for you. When you get a book and you're going to have to give it a negative review, do you ever just go back to the publisher or someone and say, I can't review this book?
Yes, absolutely. My process is I get somewhere between 3 to 5 books a day, so I can only realistically cover about 25% of them. And for that reason, I've adopted this way in which I get into books. I usually have a stack. I don't play favorites. I'll open one up. I try to read it for about 100 pages. And if I can tell in the first 100 pages this book is not good, I just pass on it. I kind of toss it to the side. I go to my bookshelf and I just grab the next one. If I'm kind of on the fence and I'm not sure, so I have to finish the book and then I feel like it's really not good, then it gets a bad review. I try to point out the flaws in it because I think there's always going to be books I don't like that other people do. And I think a good example of that is, like I said earlier, Vince Flynn's my all-time favorite author. If you go and look at some of his early reviews for some of his early books at, like, on Kirkus or other review sites, media outlets, they're not good. There's some really bad reviews. And as we look back on that now, it just seems ridiculous that anyone could not have liked them. So I always try to point out what I didn't like about it in case other people would. But I think the greatest compliment I've ever been paid as a critic, I probably can't say which book, but there was a book that I reviewed last year and I noted some really big flaws in the book, especially in the first 100 pages, and basically said, you know, it was garbage. But after that, it really takes off. So if you can suffer through the first 100 pages, you're in for a treat with the next 300 pages. That makes a lot more sense. And so I put out this review, and it was a few days later, I got an email from the author's editor, the editor from the publisher who actually worked on the book. And he told me it was one of the best reviews he'd ever read because he agreed with it 100%. And if he could go back and change some things from that book, he totally would have because he agreed with my assessment. So that meant a lot to me. So I really try to put a lot of thought into what gets a good, what gets a bad review. And I always try to say why I gave it a good or bad review, what I liked and what I didn't like, just in case our likes and dislikes are different.
I think that's a great policy. Now, I've always said I'll never give a book review. That's not my thing. Now, like you, I'm very much a people person, and I love finding out what makes that author tick. Like, why doesn't Jack Reese like mayonnaise? Or not Jack Reese. I'm sorry. Jack Carr's main character. What's his name?
James Reese.
James Reese. I'm always mixing James and Jack up.
Yeah.
Why doesn't James Reese like mayonnaise? Well, it turns out Jack Carr doesn't either.
Right. And, right.
You know, it was things like that that I'm always just curious about. Always, you know, what makes this author tick? How do they sit down and slay that blank page? You know, things like, what was the one thing you had to take out of this book? Your editor said, nope, it's gotta go. Because they always say editing is slaying your darling. Now, my question for you about editing, have you ever come across a book that it was a good book, but it really needed another editing pass?
Yeah, you find that a lot with, I don't want a dog, you know, indie books or smaller publishers. But frankly, you see a lot of those inconsistencies or errors, mistakes in books that are not produced with one of the big 5 or 6 publishers. There's a reason why the Simon and Schusters and the Penguins and the Hachettes and Macmillans are the best publishers in the world, because they're really good at this stuff. So, you know, the editing process is always fluid. It's sometimes hard for me to judge what you're talking about, simply because when I get the book, it's not finished. So I usually get, like you touched on, I get the ARC, the advanced reader copy. But it's really common with, if I know the editor or the author, the publisher, whatever, I'll get that book sometimes 8, 9 months early. I just got a book yesterday. It's a bound manuscript, and the book doesn't come out until I think next March or April. So that book's going to undergo some changes. Now, I get to get kind of a first look at it, and I get to talk about it with my audience then, but it's going to undergo changes. So if anything, I think what's funny for me is I can tell which writers are kind of a rough edit, which ones aren't. But that editing process is fluid because you have what's called line editing. So that people are going to go through and edit for content and stuff like that. And then you have the copy editing. And that's, you know, I think most people, when you say I'm an editor, they just assume like you're a proofreader. And I think one of the editors I respect most, his name is Tom Colgan at Penguin. He once put that in a tweet or on Facebook or something, and I laughed at that. He said every time he says he's an editor, people think he's a glorified proofreader. And I thought that was funny that people just assume, you know, he's proofreading for grammatical errors. That being said, Vince Flynn was really known for typos, and I get a big kick out of those. Yes. There's some other guys that they don't have 100% clean manuscripts. Sometimes I'll tease the author if I'm friends with them. I probably shouldn't say who right now, but there's a really good example of a recent author. If they hear this, they'll know who they are. And I sent them their typo in the book, and they said back to me, wouldn't it be terrible if I had made that mistake in the book? And I sent back, no, you did. This was a real, that's really from the page. And they were just, you know, mortified and totally embarrassed. It's one of those things where, yes, you notice it, and sometimes you can have fun with it. I do think the writers who are self-publishing, if they don't get a good editor or they don't understand the difference between needing a line editor and a copy editor, then their work is more prone to having errors and mistakes. And certainly you catch those typos, yeah.
Great, great. I always say editing makes all the difference in a book, and you can always – I've read – fantastic self-published books, and I've read lousy self-pub. I've read fantastic traditionally published books, and I've read some lousy ones that I thought needed some more editing. I mean, it's one of those things, you can see it sometimes, even in the finished product. So it's one of those things, a great editor can make all the difference.
They often do. You know, I mentioned Tom Colgan, but you like Brad Thor and I like Vince Flynn. They've shared an editor their entire careers. Emily Bessler at Simon & Schuster. She's one of the best at, I mean, she's, everyone loves her within the industry. She's well revered. People really respect what she's done. To have two authors, you know, that you're editing that turn out to be as good and prolific and as well received and respected as Vince Flynn and Brad Thor, that speaks volumes about Emily Bessler as an editor. And certainly the same is, you know, true for Tom Colgan. And there's a guy I really like and respect at St. Martin's Press. His name is Keith Kayla, and he works on some books for some authors that I really, really enjoy. So when I'm in a unique position because I know editors, but I certainly feel like I can sometimes see the way the editor has swayed a book or manuscript. And one of the things I love is to talk to the authors about that. Usually it's stuff that they want to talk about off the record. But there's some great stories out there of, you know, editors disagreeing with their writers and the writers finally just kind of giving in and going with what their editor wants. And then that change might be like what makes the book this great success or what people kind of key in on and talk about. And so that's a fun thing. You know, the trust between an editor and an author is very real. And you're right. You can totally see when someone doesn't have like an experienced or good editor helping them along with the writing process.
All right. So what's the fourth book on the table?
So the fourth book is probably my favorite so far. It's called Bloody Sunday by Ben Coase. If you're not reading Ben Coase and you like Brad Thor or Vince Flynn, you've got to try Ben Coase. For my money, he's the closest thing to Vince Flynn since Vince Flynn. And his new book is, it's hard for me to say it's his best because I know Ben and I've told him repeatedly that one of my favorite all-time books is called First Strike. And that's a book that he wrote a couple years ago. This one is very timely. It deals with what's happening in North Korea. And I don't want to give anything away about the plot, obviously, but Ben told me last year when he was going to write this book, I spoke to him and I interviewed him last year and we talked and he told me he's always wanted to send his protagonist, Dewey Andreas, you know, to North Korea, but you just can't send an American to North Korea. They stick out. It's too hard to do. And so when he came up with this plot idea, where North Korea was going to try to start a nuclear war. He knew he wanted to send Dewey there, but he had to find a reason to send him there. So what he came up with is, and this is not a spoiler, it's if you go to the Amazon page like right now and read this, it says this, but the CIA comes up with this idea to poison this North Korean scientist, and Dewey's supposed to be the one to poison him, and they have like one antidote. And that antidote's in North Korea. So naturally, nothing goes according to plan, and Dewey accidentally injects a little bit of the poison into himself. And now he has to go to North Korea if he wants to survive. So it was a really brilliant way, I think, to take his character to North Korea. And then kind of like while he's there, hey, by the way, we have this massive threat to national security. So we need Dewey to do this, that, and this. And it's a great book. It's fast paced, but yet it's long. I mean, you get your money's worth. And Coase is a really, really great writer. He's one of the best writers working today, just from a pure writing standpoint. What he's able to do with the plot and his characters, though, is I can't think of a better 3 or 4 book stretch that he's on right now that started with First Strike and then Trap the Devil and then Bloody Sunday. I can't think of an author that did 3 or 4 books better than what he's doing at the moment. So if you like action-packed thrillers that move fast and are timely and give you kind of a behind-the-scenes look at what's going on in the CIA and stuff like that, then Bloody Sunday should absolutely be on your to-read list this summer.
And when does Bloody Sunday come out?
It comes out July 31st.
Okay, so it's the end of July. So
it is, yeah.
Brad Thor starts July and Ben Coase closes it.
And Daniel Silva's right in the middle. So July is going to be, in my opinion, I've said this, if you ever go to therealbooksby.com, I put out monthly news, I put out a monthly newsletter, but there's monthly reading guides. So I break down all the new releases. And I almost feel bad to all the other months because ever since probably since January, I keep teasing that this summer, you know, there's a lot of good books out now, but this summer's when all the best book comes out. And so I've been doing that, and I've been saying for all year, July is going to be the month for thrillers. If you're a thriller fan, save your sick days and all your book spending money for July, because between Thor, Silva, and Coase, you're not going to find a better month for thrillers than that.
Outstanding. Now, I don't know about you, but I have a pet peeve when it comes to thriller, and I'm going to pull Brad Thor back into this conversation. He likes to write what he's coined the term faction. You don't know where the facts end and the fiction begins. And I understand taking literary license with things, but when you decide to change something that anybody with Google can verify is totally inaccurate, i.e. you make two streets intersect that don't, or you move the location of a landmark. I mean, I equate it with, you just put the Washington Monument in downtown Detroit. That is going to send me over the edge. Do you have a similar thriller pet peeve?
I do, yeah. And it's funny that you mention Brad Thor with faction. I actually say that he writes prophetic fiction because his stuff has this way of coming true. It's almost eerie. And I'm always on the lookout for guys that want to be timely, but there are, you know, there's certain pitfalls, I think, that get played out. Basically, if you're to take like any protagonist or hero of these stories, they always have like a wife or girlfriend, significant other that dies. And sometimes it gets so repetitive that I just cringe. You get so tired of it because literally everybody does it. There's this idea, I think sometimes the authors, they're kind of writing it in, and they don't, at the end of the day, want their character with someone because it kind of handcuffs them what they can do as far as the story. Then you have to include, you know, their wife, girlfriend, whatever. And so I always kind of cringe. Like, I feel like when there's a new series that launches and if I'm tracking it for like a few years, I'll sometimes kind of laugh. Like if I'm on like book two and the love interest in book one is now like they're really together and they're married in book three, I always kind of laugh. And like before the fourth book comes out, I say like, she's going to die in this one. And more often than not, that's true. And it almost drives me nuts because it's so played out. Everyone does it that I just feel like not everyone needs the same story. You don't need every character in this genre that's had a wife or girlfriend that was killed to be able to do what they do. And so I actually give points to like Daniel Silva because Gabriel Alon is married and he just had children a few books ago. Like, I think that's cool. He's taking a risk with that. And by kind of rolling the dice and taking chances, I feel like it separates him from what a lot of other people are doing. And so that's kind of one of my pet peeves, is I always feel like a lot of times these characters, these love interests, are introduced just so they can die somewhere down the road, and it gets old after a while. That's just my opinion. And I do think, though, because I talk with a lot of the writers that make these decisions, a lot of it comes down to what readers want. So they'll introduce a love interest, and if the readers like her, then she'll hang around. And one of the authors that we've been talking about, I won't say his name, we had a private conversation last year, and I asked him about one of the love interests for his character. And he said, you know, I love her, you love her, I don't think other readers like her. You know, I haven't heard about her. When I do my book signings, no one's talked about her. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. So there is a lot of feedback. You know, when fans get on social media or they go to book signings, they can kind of like sway the writer into how they're going to handle that relationship moving forward. But it's a huge pet peeve of mine. I always just feel like, couldn't they just break up, you know, type of thing? Like they always have to die, and they always seem to die in a similar way. The setup is always like the main character, the hero, someone's trying to kill them and accidentally kills their wife or girlfriend, right? That just seems to be really played out in my mind. And so, yeah, that's probably my biggest pet peeve for the action thriller genre.
Outstanding. Well, we have reached the time in the show where we have to pay those radio station bills. So I'm going to pour you a cup of coffee, and we are going to take a commercial break, and we'll see you on the other side.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words, making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your healthcare? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their healthcare. healthcare, freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your healthcare, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your healthcare while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
Sometimes riders feel lost, unsure why a passage. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our riding into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable riders to develop, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating style site. Black Wolf Services, nurturing your riding into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
Thank you for hanging in there with us while we pay those radio station bills. I'm going to pour myself a fresh cup of coffee. And speaking of coffee, Ryan, I do have to ask, what is your favorite coffee shop treat?
Yeah, so I'm not exactly like a coffee shop kind of guy. I drink coffee, but I usually just drink it black, usually in my office. So I would have to go with, and this is funny because my wife is a big coffee shop, you know, like enthusiast. She loves coffee shops, and her favorite is there's the coffee shop in Michigan, a few other states where I'm at, but it's called Big B. And I never knew how to order for her. She'd always have to text me what she wanted if I picked her up coffee. And just recently, I committed it to memory. So I would have to go with a grande skim fluffy clouds with an extra shot. Or a teddy bear. She'll get one that's called the grande skim teddy bear with an extra shot. And that always makes me uncomfortable because it's awkward being a fully grown man standing in a coffee shop in front of other people and ordering a drink called the teddy bear.
So you don't like ordering a teddy bear. I can kind of understand that. All right.
Yeah, no, I do not like ordering a teddy bear.
I can't blame you, but it is cute. Teddy bears are just adorable.
Yeah, they're not for fully grown men, though. That's the problem there. So, you know, it is what it is. I love my wife enough to walk in a coffee shop full of people and say that out loud. But I do try to, like, lean across the counter and say it real quietly.
Well, I'm going to tell a small tale out of school. You know, my husband is active duty military, and he is currently stationed halfway around the world.
Uh-huh.
And every time we talk, whether it's over the phone or via Skype or something, when we say goodbye, we blow each other kisses. Can you imagine being a soldier in the middle of all your buddies blowing your wife a kiss on the phone?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably right up there with ordering her a teddy bear in the coffee shop.
So I'm sure my husband and you could swap stories on that level.
Yeah, we probably could. The things we do for our wives, yes.
Exactly. All right, you have a nickname that's starting to creep out, but you have an older and it's called the Godfather of the Thriller Genre. Now, I've also seen 001, and I also know from following you on social media, yeah, I cyberstalked you a little bit, that you're also known as Ryan the Rapologist. Now, of all those three, is there one you particularly find more interesting?
I mean, there's absolutely no debate or question in my mind. My favorite will always be the Rapologist because that's me. It's really not a gimmick or anything. It's really true. For those who don't know, the Rapologist kind of refers to knowledge of the Mitch Rapp universe that Vince Flynn created, which
in fact,
I refer to
you love the Mitch Rapp character so much. You named your sixth child Mitch.
Yeah, exactly right. So I call it the Rapverse, as does Kyle Mills, who's writing those books now. And the nickname actually originated with Vince Flynn's publicist on Twitter. I was just tweeting out a lot of Mitch Rapp facts, and if you don't know me, I kind of came up being a Mitch Rapp fan. I probably should have address that more so when you asked me earlier how I got into this. But that was a big thing is I compiled all these stats and this information on Mitch Rapp. And I really didn't do it as a crazy fan. I really did it because I was, you know, I talked earlier about being dyslexic and I was trying to battle that. And I was still a sports journalist at the time. So when you're a sports journalist, you're watching the game and you're writing the story at the same time. So it was just, it was very second nature for me to be scribbling down notes about Mitch Rapp and the series as a whole. And when I got done, I had, I mean, so many legal pads. I won't even say because it makes me sound like a total nut job. And my wife said, this is like too much work to not do something with. So you need to, you know, do something with it. Put it online. So I started a website called Mitch Rapp Fan, and I put all the info out there. And that was sort of how I linked up with Vince's publisher. And so I think the world of his publicist, and he's a great guy, and he nicknamed me the Rapologist, and it really stuck. It really stuck. And that means the most to me because I think of myself as the Rapologist even before the books buy. We get a big kick out of that because my kids have introduced me to strangers as this is my dad, the Rapologist, or this is my dad, the real book spy. So yeah, it's fun. And my wife and I we have six kids, and our youngest is named Mitchell after Mitch Rapp. And it just seemed very fitting. Vince's family's been great about all of it. And so he was born last October, and he's actually his name is Mitchell Ryan Scott with one T after Scott Harvath as well. So he better grow up to like Thrillers, or, you know, it's going to be awkward for him the rest of his life.
With a name like Mitchell Ryan Scott, he'd better love Thrillers, or Houston, we have a problem.
I mean, it would be so awkward someday when he's like in college and people are like, where'd you get your name? And he explains it, but he's not a reader or doesn't like Thrillers. But I honestly don't think that'll be a problem. My kids like being in my office more than their playroom. And even my daughter, who's four, loves to read. All my kids are big readers. So hopefully Mitch will just follow suit and grow up and get to tell people he's named after, you know, a CIA assassin, and then have a great story. That's what I hope.
Well, I've got to say, one of my favorite sayings is reading is the only addiction I'll feed.
Yeah, that's a great one. I'm thankful for people like that because I have a job because of it. So I definitely encourage that.
Well, you're the first person I've had on this show who isn't a publisher or an author. I had one interview recently that was the author and their publisher, which I found rather interesting. But it's been one of those things, I thought you would be a fun addition to the cast of characters I've had on Coffee Shop, because I've said I'll read anything, including the cereal box, if it hangs out in front of me long enough. But the first genre I go to when I'm just reading to read is thriller, if I don't have a book that I just interviewed the author and they gave me a copy of their book or something like that, I will go to the thriller genre. Now, you've mentioned four books that are coming out. Can you give us a couple that are already out we could run to the bookstore and buy while we're waiting?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a great year for thrillers, mystery, crime, whatever you like. I'll start with the best book I've ever read, the highest ranking I've ever scored a book. There's always like a 1 from 10 scale. I've only ever given one book a 10 out of 10. It's Don Winslow's The Force. And Stephen King said that book is basically the Godfather with police officers. And it's right on the money. I've never read anything better than that. I'm honestly not sure I ever will. And I was so blown away when I finished that book. I just could not wait to get, you know, on and talk to people about it. And that's makes my job really fun. So that is, if you haven't read that, I mean, that's the best book I've ever read, The Force. And that actually came out last year. So for books that have already come out this year, yes, there's several. If you like military thrillers, Brad Taylor, he's absolutely fantastic. Brad is a great guy. He was in the military for a long time. Most recently, he was with Delta. And his stuff is so authentic. I mean, he writes with the kind of been there, done that authenticity that only a soldier could. So his stuff is like, I mean, it's so real that like you almost want to duck for cover when the firefights like start in the book. It's fantastic. It's really good. He's got a book out this year called Operator Down. It came out in January.
It's lights out. Ominous.
Yeah, it's a very good book. I cannot recommend that one enough for like military action thrillers. For spy thrillers, we've talked a lot about the authors that I consider kind of the best that have done it, like the Mount Rushmore of thriller authors, which is Brad Thor and Vince Flynn and Daniel Silva. The next wave, I kind of refer to these guys as the next wave, but that's led by Mark. And I really think his Gray Man series is going to go down as being right up there with Vince Flynn and Brad Thor and Daniel Silva. So his book, his most recent book came out I think it was February, and it's called Agent in Place. You just will not find a better spy thriller than that in stores this year. The Gray Man works for the CIA but doesn't. It's a unique setup, and in this one, he's trying to help. There's this group of people that want to overthrow the Syrian regime, and he gets caught up in it, and then there's like a big twist. So that book is really, really good. Probably my favorite book that's come out so far this year. Another one of my very favorite authors of all time that we haven't talked about at all. His name is C.J. Box, and his book, The Disappeared, the latest in his Joe Pickett series. Out of all the books we're talking about, Box and his character, Joe Pickett, could not be more different. He's not a spy. He's not an assassin. Joe Pickett is a game warden in Wyoming. These are crime novels, and they're some of my very favorite books ever written. The Disappeared, I think, is C.J. Box at his absolute best. There's a British woman who comes to America. She goes to Wyoming for this weekend at a dude ranch to get the full ranching experience and meet some attractive ranchers. And then she never returns home and she goes missing. And so Joe is appointed by the Wyoming governor to help find her because there's a lot of negative press surrounding her disappearance. And as he looks into it, you know, I'm not going to spoil it, but certainly the book twists and turns its way to a very shocking conclusion. So I really love that book. There's a book that just came out, I want to say last Tuesday, or just this past Tuesday, Matthew Bettley's Field of Valor. And Matthew Bettley is another guy that's in that next wave of must-read authors.
Well, I interviewed Matthew.
Yeah, that's right. He was on with you. Absolutely, yeah. He is lights out, too. Bettley is one of those guys in 10, 15 years. I hope you're still doing this, and I can come back on, and we'll be talking about him right up there with, you know, the Vinces and the Brads and all those guys. He's really good. That book is outstanding. I actually gave that, I think, a 9.75 out of 10. One of the highest scores I've ever given a book. So, yeah, that one's out.
If I was going to read just one book this year, because I'm not an avid reader. Well, I am, but let's pretend for a minute I'm not. What's the one I have to get my hands?
Yeah, so for me, I'm going to answer this not as a critic first, but as a fan. It's called Red War. It's the next Mitch Rapp book from Kyle Mills, and it actually comes out in September. We could be on for hours, and I would never have enough time to talk about the job that Kyle Mills has done. I mean, I think so much of him, I could just go on and on. He basically, I can't think of a more difficult scenario than stepping in for a legend like Vince Flynn. It's been done before. Yes, a lot of people talk about Robert Ludlum or more recently Tom Clancy. Mark Greaney was writing with Tom Clancy before Tom Clancy passed away. So he was kind of eased into it, and Mark's done a really great job, and he's a great writer in his own right. But I cannot think of another author that has taken on an iconic series and just not skipped a beat the way Kyle Mills has done with the Mitch Rapp stuff. I would even argue, as good as Vince is, that Kyle has taken the series to another level. He brings a lot to the table and a different perspective than Vince had. And at the same time, he's stayed very, very true to what Vince Flynn started and created within this universe. So it's the same Mitch Rapp. You don't read it and think this is someone else's take on Mitch. It is Mitch Rapp. It's the same Mitch Rapp that you knew if you were a fan of Vince Flynn.
Cut in here for 1 second. I love Vince. In fact, I found Vince before I found Brad Thor. But one of his books just bugs me to this day, and it's an actual Vince Flynn written book. He wrote the whole series, or as many of the books as he did, and then he went back and did what I call the prequel book of American Assassin, which was also recently released as a movie. But if you compare the timelines that he put in his original books with American Assassin, there's one glaring error. What age was Mitch Rapp when his father died? I mean, we're given two different ages, and that just bugged me. I was like, some editor should have caught that.
Yeah, I know just what you're talking about. Originally, it says in Consent to Kill that Mitch was only 8 years old when his father died. And in American Assassin, it says that he was 13. So that's a big joke amongst fans, is Mitch's dad died twice. And, you know, all kidding aside, like, Vince was known for little mistakes like this. That's certainly not the only one. Throughout the series, it's been known that Mitch got into the CIA because his high school sweetheart and girlfriend that he followed to Syracuse University was killed in Pan Am Flight 103. And so her name has always been Maureen Elliott. And in American Assassin, if you read it, she's referred to as Mary. So yes, there was a few inconsistencies with that book, which is actually the first of two prequel novels, followed by Killshot. But I've had a lot of fun, you know, going over things like that. Kyle and I have gotten to know each other, and I really don't do like anything for Kyle. Every once in a while, you know, we'll trade notes on things, especially early on. Now, it's funny now because he gives me more credit than I deserve, especially on social media and stuff. Kyle knows this series like the back of his hand. He knows Mitch Rapp and the Rappverse very well. But we'll trade notes and stuff, and that was definitely one that we talked about. The fact that Mitch's dad has died twice and Mary was Maureen, but then is referred to as Mary. And yeah, there's some inconsistencies there. But overall, you know, Vince is a great writer. And American Assassin is actually one of my favorite books ever written. So I can overlook minor things like that if the story's really good. And that certainly is.
Well, I just happened to look it up. I can tell you exactly what Vince Flynn novel. I told you I found Vince before I found Brad. I can tell you exactly what Vince Flynn novel was the first one I read, and it was Memorial Day.
Yeah, obviously that's timely right now. There's another tidbit about that book. What I've been told is, actually, I think Vince himself talked about this in an interview once, that there's a scene in the book where someone's got a nuclear weapon on a boat going up the Potomac, and that book kind of got flagged before publication because the Pentagon didn't have an exact contingency maybe for that scenario. So that was another instance of Vince, much like Brad with this prophetic fiction. He was always coming up with stuff. I mean, there's the famous story that Vince would tell that, you know, he had so many fans, and among those fans were presidents, multiple presidents, from Bill Clinton to Bush. And he actually was in a limo once with President Bush and the second President Bush. And it was going really good until President Bush told him that his stories were very accurate, a little too accurate, and asked him who his source was. And it was uncomfortable, but, you know, then he kind of laughed it off. And Vince had told that stories in many interviews. And so it is kind of hilarious that a guy could be so spot on when it comes to seeing the future and guessing what's going to happen. Because it's hard when you're a thriller novelist, you're writing something that's not going to come out for like at least a year when you start writing it. So you're trying to project to what's going to be relevant in like a year. And Vince is so famous because everyone in the genre, including Clancy and all these other guys, were still looking at Russia, the threat of Russia. And when Vince kind of turned his attention and pivoted towards Islamic extremists and that form of terrorism, like, he was one of the first writers to do that. And so he was really great at reading the tea leaves. And that's what's so funny, that he could do that, but then there would still be little errors in his own book. Like, you know, the guy that could predict this would happen or that would happen, or gets grilled by the president of the United States about his sources, forgets that he, you know, already killed Rapp's father at age 13 and then writes it in at age 8. You know, that's just funny to me. But that was Vince.
Well, I totally enjoyed Memorial Day. And when I found that, I went back and in 4 days read everything Vince had published to that point. Then I was looking for another author and that was similar. And that's how I stumbled across Brad Thor. So that was my first intro to both Vince and Brad. And I have to say, it's been a fun ride.
Yeah, it really has. And the ride is not stopping anytime soon. Brad is still one of the best authors working today, especially for his genre, but just in general, he's one of the greatest authors working right now. Kyle Mills has supercharged the Mitch Rapp series. You know, it's got a whole new energy and vibe to it on top of what Vince had already established. Kyle has breathed new life into that, like, you know, I never could have expected. Being a big Vince Flynn fan, I was so concerned when I first heard the series was going to continue on after Vince passed away, because I didn't love the idea of another author putting their fingerprints on this franchise that I loved. Looking back, I think of how ridiculous that was. If I could only know what I know now. Kyle is a great person. He's a really good guy. And I think what I admire most about him, besides the fact that he's a good writer, he really, really cares about getting it right for the fans. So he interacts with fans on Twitter and social media, Facebook and stuff like that. But he really cares about nailing those details. He wants things to sound like it's something Mitch would say. So I agree. It's been a fun ride. And I look, you know, as to where everything's going to go next. You know, we have a lot of adventures left with Scott Harvath and Mitch Rapp.
Well, that's great to know. Now, is there anything I haven't brought up you wanted to mention?
Oh, man. I don't think so.
Well, I have one last question.
Okay.
How did you come up with the logo, the real book spot. I mean, it's a great logo, but how did you come up with the guy holding a gun in one hand and an arc? And it's specifically an arc in the other.
All right, hold on a sec, because that's tough for me to answer because I got in a copyright dispute with the original creator and I won it, but I'm not supposed to talk too much about it. So
well, can you just tell me,
for me to answer.
Was it something that you dreamed up or was it something that someone else helped you come up with or something general like that?
I mean, I definitely didn't do it. All right, just give me a sec. Let me think of how I should say that. I just don't want to get yelled at by my business partner when I'm done.
We can kill that and I can come up with something else.
Yeah, maybe do, because I just don't want to get in trouble with him for that.
And I will kill this part of the recording.
I mean, you can ask me whatever you want. I'll try to answer anything. I mean, whatever you want to go to next. But that one, I just don't know how to answer without checking with him.
No problem. I can deal with that.
But I will tell you off the record, I did not at all. I mean, I had like an idea of, I said, I just want like an avatar. I do not want him to have a face. And so the artist that did it, they said, like, why not? And I said, I just wanted to be ambiguous, like a spy. Like, they don't have a face, you know, like, they're the ultimate gray man. So they were like, perfect. And they kind of shadowed me to see what I do and all that. And I never expected, like, they actually picked up the lingo. So when I got the first look at the logo itself, and I saw the book and I looked and it said ARC on it, I was really impressed that the artist picked that up. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, wow, you even put ARC on there. And they're like, yeah, I heard you say that a lot. So I thought that was neat. And so I left it.
All right. Let's see. Trying to come up with another good question.
Believe me, I know how hard it is to come up with good questions. I'm trying to help you think, by the way.
Okay. I just got something.
Okay.
I know you review a lot of traditionally published books. Do any of the self or smaller publisher published books make it onto the book spy, or very few? And if so, what's the most or what's your favorite indie or self-pub book that you've ever had on the book spy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I honestly could not care less who publishes it. Really the big thing for me is how fast do I get it? It's a little different. Like, I just got Brad Thor's book, and his book obviously comes out next month or in July. Because of my schedule, I have to read about a book per day. So the sooner I get a book, the better chances I can cover it. And that's why a lot of times, if I know the editor directly that's doing the book, they'll just like overnight me, they'll like print it off and just send me a bound manuscript 6 to 8 months early. That way I've got plenty of time to get it in and then like plan our coverage for it. So really, for me, it comes down to how fast do I get it? And a lot of times, like with indie writers, they don't think that far ahead. So they'll come to me like, hey, my book's coming out next week. I would love to get a review. I don't have time. You know, what I'll say to them is like, if you send it to me, I can, within the next 6 months, I'll really try. But there's one guy that self-published that I'm a huge fan of. His name's JT Patton. And so he actually he went the like the self-published route and somehow like got on my radar before I was even like a critic. And so he writes the Sean Havens Black Ops thrillers. And the first book is called I think it's called Shadow Masters. It was the first book review I've ever written. I wasn't a critic yet. And I picked it up. I think I talked to him somehow. I can't remember the whole story now. But so I got a copy of his book and I read it and I loved it. And I like wrote a review and I put it on Goodreads. I've since taken that review down because it's so embarrassing. I mean, I didn't know anything about the art of writing a book review, which is a real thing. There's kind of a way to do that, and how much you say, what you don't say, how you lead into it, your conclusion. Like, I didn't know any of that. So it was the first book review I ever wrote. And years later, when I was a critic and established and had the books by and all that, I was talking to JT about it. And I said, you know, that was the first book review I've ever written. So that book's special to me. And he's such a nice guy. And I probably like a week later, I got a package in the mail from him. And it was a signed copy of Safe Havens. And it said to Ryan, so this is where it all began. And that's like one of my most treasured books. And I think sometimes I'll have friends over, people come over to the house, and I've got a a pretty nice collection of personalized books from different, you know, different authors that I enjoy or that I'm friends with. And a lot of really cool, I call book swag, collectibles, stuff like that. That is always up there. And a lot of people, they'll know a lot of these big names. And they're like, that's awesome. I love him. Who's this guy? And that's like right up there with all my stuff that I show off. I'm very proud of it. So I actually have that book like enclosed and framed. Because it was the first book review I ever wrote. And to think back then, I had no idea I would go on to write, you know, hundreds and hundreds of book reviews. That's really special to me. So he was self-published and he actually has a book deal with Kensington now. And I did do an announcement, for him on the Books By, because I don't just do book reviews. I never wanted to just be a reviewer. Because I was a sports journalist, the way I sort of view my job is I used to cover, an NFL team. So I sort of view what I do now, the genre as a whole, as like an NFL team, and the writers themselves as like the players. So I definitely try to like cover not just the characters and the stories, but the authors as well. So we do a lot of book reveals, and, you know, reveal covers and titles of the next book, stuff like that. And when they get book deals. So I was thrilled when JT Patton reached out to me and told me he had a deal with Kensington and did I want to report on it? And I couldn't say yes fast enough. So I'm really thrilled. I actually just got a copy of that, of his new book. And I don't even know if the title's out there, so I can't really say anything except that it's really good. And he's grown a lot and he went through the self-publishing phase and then now he's with Kensington. And so I think the world of that guy and I'm really proud of what he's done. And he's a terrific, very underrated author. If people are looking for someone that's a little less mainstream, they should definitely check him out.
Fantastic. Well, based on that question, I got another one. If a self-published author or small publisher, you know, author with a small publisher is wanting to get their book reviewed by you, how would they go about reaching out to you?
Yeah, the easiest way is just to shoot me an email.
And when would they reach out to you?
Okay. All right. Let me start over then. So the easiest way is make contact as soon as you can. The faster a book's on my radar, then the better the odds are I'm going to get to cover it. I keep a really tight schedule just because I have help around me, but I'm the only one that touches the book reviews. And as far as like a critic, I do have an editor and stuff like that to help, but I read everything myself. So I pencil things in and I have a strict schedule. The sooner I know about a book, the easier it is for me because then I'm kind of watching for it. The faster I get it as far ahead of publication, the better. And I can be reached by email at ryan@therealbooksby.com.
Fantastic. Now, if some reader wants to try and get more information about an author or something out of you, how would they go about doing that? Would they reach out to you on social media, shoot you an email? How would they go about cyberstalking you, for lack of a good term here?
No, that's a perfect term. I love it. I'm always up to talk books. And I will say it's getting a little harder as our traffic has really soared. It's a little harder to keep up with it. But one of the things I do is free personalized book recommendations. You can find that on the website. There's a tab for it. Basically, it shoots an email to me. That doesn't go to like my assistant, my editor. No, but that goes right to me. And you tell me what books you like, and I'll shoot you back 3 to 5 recommendations with a few lines on why I think that author or that book's a good fit for you. I used to be able to guarantee like 24 hours and then 48 hours. Now I'm looking at like within a couple days to reach everyone. But if you don't just want personalized recommendations and you just want to talk thrillers, I'm on Twitter. And so you can reach me at The Real Books By. I'm on Facebook and via email. I get a lot of people that do not use social media at all, but they love to connect via email. So I get, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of emails every day from readers and try to connect with each one of them. And I really enjoy that. I enjoy when people say, you know, I agreed with you on this point and what'd you think of that? Or I even enjoy when I get, hey, I disagreed. This book was pretty good and here's why. I love, you know, talking about different books in the genre with other readers because at its core, I'm really just a reader and a fan too. So that's my favorite part of the job is talking with other readers and other fans.
Fantastic. And I didn't know you had that personalized book recommendation.
I do. It's become a bear because I get so many of them.
As the book spy, you read, what, 100 books in a year? 200?
No. Is this on the record?
Yes.
Okay, so let me answer it like this. Yes, so my review schedule is pretty intense. Last year I was shooting for 300 reviews, and then my wife got pregnant and she had like really serious complications. She almost died in labor. So I had to pull way back at the end of the year and kind of let up on the gas pedal there. So for this year, I've already filed. There's over 100 reviews up from this year alone, and I'm tracking to do about 250 for 2018.
Wow, that's a lot of book reviews. And that doesn't count the ones you the first 100 pages and say, never mind. So is there any advice you'd like to give to readers when they're picking out that next book? They're either browsing Amazon or in the bookstore. What advice would you give to that reader who's trying to pick out that next book?
Well, that's a tough one. So let's just say they come to me. It's a whole lot easier if you kind of know what it is you're looking for, like what your own interests are. If you were to walk into a bookstore or shoot me an email and say, well, I love Vince Flynn, it's very easy for me to say, then read Brad Thor. But if you tell me what you love about Vince Flynn and Mitch Rapp, I can give you 10 recommendations. So if you say, I love that Mitch is with the CIA and, you know, he just smokes all these terrorists and he's just like the baddest dude ever, like no one stands a chance, he's larger than life. Well, I can come back to you with, yeah, you should read Brad Thor, but you should also read like Ben Coase and Mark Greene and Brad Taylor and all these guys that we've been talking about. That makes my job easier. If you say to me, I love CJ Box, I might think that you love outdoorsy types of, you know, books. And that's what you want, like similar game warden stuff. So there's books I would recommend for that. But if what you love about that is the crime element, the fact that they're really crime novel, that changes the game. So I think, you know, if you're looking, either you're asking someone for recommendations, know what it is you like, so that that person can help, especially me. I get that all the time. And some of them are really easy, like we've already touched on. But like another one is someone will say, I love James Bond. Well, the easiest recommendation in the world for that is Ted Bell. His character, Alex Hawk, is, you know, he's British MI6 and he's a lot like James Bond, only rich, like really rich. He's like the sixth richest man in the country. So that kind of thing is easy. But I always
sounds
recommend
like he's a cross between Batman and James Bond.
Yeah, I tell Ted Bell all the time, he's like a cross between James Bond and Iron Man. Without the suit. He reminds me a lot of Tony Stark from the Marvel Universe, the way he talks and acts and all that. I always sort of envision Robert Downey Jr. playing Sherlock Holmes with the accent, but being Tony Stark from Iron Man as Alex Hawk. That's sort of how I envision him. Yeah.
All right. Well, I know we've touched on parts of this during the interview, but I always like to have it all in one spot for my listeners. Why don't you give out your social media contact information?
Yeah. So again, I'm on Twitter, and that is, I interact a lot more on Twitter just because of the way that's set up. It's so much easier. It's faster. And people can, you know, direct message me or we can just tweet, but I'm on Twitter at The Real Books By. I am on Facebook, you know, facebook.com/TheRealBooksBy. And I don't really do Instagram. I have a lot of people that say, like, you should get on Instagram. I'm trying to figure that out. So hopefully next time we talk, I'm on Instagram too. But otherwise, you know, email is the best way to reach me. And then, of course, TheRealBooksBy.com.
You're leaving out a Twitter handle there, friend.
Oh, well, of course. Yes. My personal account where I primarily talk about Mitch Rapp is at Mitch Rapp Fans. And I try to keep it all like Mitch Rapp related, but I, you know, sometimes I'm putting some personal things in there or tweeting pictures of my kids, stuff like that. You know, it's more of a personal account, but really geared towards Mitch Rapp and being a fan of Vince Flynn and stuff.
Well, since we mentioned baby Mitch, it's only fair to tell people where to find his photo.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. And That's a good point. And I think he's super cute. So hopefully other people do too. But yeah, no, I love putting him up there. And every once in a while, I'll get someone and it's really funny. They'll say like, I don't understand why, you know, this, you're at Mitch Rapp Fans. Why are you putting up photos of your kid that's named like whatever? And I'll laugh and say, you know, well, he's named Mitch after Mitch Rapp. So then people come back like, oh, no way. Seriously? And my wife is even on Twitter. She's at Mrs. Mitch Rapp Fans. And she informed me that she only started a Twitter account to embarrass me and give me a hard time publicly. So if you really want to get a laugh or, you know, see her make fun of me, you can find her too.
Outstanding. Well, I got to ask, which one of those arcs am I going to get to steal and read today? Or do you have another book hiding for me?
Oh, man, that's tough. What do you want me to say? Because I can say whatever you want me with that.
Pass me something that's already out. That's fine. I always close the show by picking up a good book. One of the ones you recommended that's already out this year, or
yes,
one you didn't
on.
Get to mention.
Let me see. I want to make sure I didn't miss any. This is a great place to make sure I didn't.
I told you, we can work them in.
I know, and I'm trying to, because, no. Oh, wait, did we talk about Jack? Oh, no, wait, I got it. I know which one.
I've already done Jack Reese,
I know, I got it. Hold on, I can't think of the guy's name. Oh, okay, I got it. All right, so can I just pause and then answer? You're ready?
All right, so what book am I getting today? Because you know I got to end the show with a book, Ryan.
Yeah, this is a book that just came out a little bit ago that I'm really, really high on. It's called Reaper Ghost Target, and it's written by two former military guys, Nicholas Irving, who's one of the most deadly snipers in U.S. military history, and former Brigadier General A.J. Tata turned bestselling author. So it's Nick Irving's written, if you've never heard of him, he earned the nickname The Reaper on the battlefield. And he wrote an autobiography called Reaper, but he wanted to get into the fiction waters, and so he teamed up with A.J. Tata, who after a long military career himself launched his own writing career and has his own series. They teamed up to start a new series following a character called Vic Harwood. And it's basically a fictional version of Nick Irving. The character's nicknamed the Reaper. He's a sniper. But that's kind of where the similarities end. And he finds himself in the middle of a big government conspiracy. That book is absolutely outstanding. I cannot recommend it enough.
Well, if you'll just pass that on over here. And what was that title again?
It's called Reaper Ghost Target.
All right. Well, I'm going to thank all you listeners for joining myself and Ryan in the coffee shop today. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Radio Host Jesse. And you can email me at jesse@klrnradio.com or jesse@jessiescoffeeshop.com. Now, I have got to remind you, don't forget to go over to jessiescoffeeshop.com. We've got a mailing list. So for those of you who aren't social media fans, you can get an email in your inbox when a new episode comes out. Now, I'm going to snatch the Reaper Ghost Target off the table. Thanks for the book, Ryan. And pour myself a cup of coffee and settle down with a good book. And I will see you folks next time in the coffee shop.